One of my very first experiences took place when our firm needed to film a genuine, real-life, spontaneous experience that taught synergy for a product we were creating. So I decided to use one of my live seminars. I chose a highly charged subject, the environment, and invited two people in the audience to come up and join me on the stage. A woman who was a strong, convinced, passionate environmentalist, a real greener, and a strong, convinced, passionate businessman who uses natural resources for economic purposes in his business. They never even shook hands. Even professional boxers touched gloves. She even attacked him on her way up to the stage, saying, "It's your ilk that has messed up our air, our water, and our kids' futures." Then he looked at her shoes and said, "Nice shoes. Are they leather?" She looked down and then back at him and responded, "What's that got to do with it?" He retorted, "I just wonder what animal you killed." She answered, "I don't kill animals." He responded, "Oh, you had others do the killing for you." That was the beginning of the communication. And you saw it even in their body language. 45 minutes later, after going slowly and patiently through the two steps, they both ended up arguing for sustainable development policies at both the corporate and the government levels. The audience was totally amazed. Whenever you teach the first step, would you be willing to search for a solution that is better than what either one of you have brought to the table? People inevitably say, as did these two, "I don't know what it would be," or "I've spent years on this matter and I have strong convictions." So you acknowledge, that's right, no one knows what it will be. It has to be created together. The question is, would you be willing to search for such a solution? They usually respond, "I will not compromise." You answer, "Of course not. Synergy is not compromise. It must be a better solution, and you must know it. The other must know it. And you both must know that you both know it. There is no compromise." In other words, you are seeking for the good of both. You are not just advocating your own case. They often respond, "But I don't know where we go from here." You go to step two. That no one can make his or her point until they restate the other person's point to his or her satisfaction. Now I'll tell you, that is the test. It is tremendously challenging for people who have endlessly argued for one position to genuinely listen to another person. Because unless they listen to another person and restate his or her point to his or her satisfaction, they can't make their point. It's the ticket of admission. I did this once at a university setting on the subject of abortion, bringing a pro-life person and a pro-choice person up front. Both felt morally committed to their positions. I took them slowly and patiently through the two steps in front of over 400 people, including an entire MBA class and many faculty and invited guests. Again, after about 40 minutes of going through the two steps slowly, they both began to talk about prevention, adoption, and education. The whole nature of the discussion had changed. The audience was literally mesmerized. Tears filled the two participants' eyes. I asked them why this was so emotional. It wasn't because of the issue at all. It was simply because they were ashamed of the way they had categorically judged and condemned, and stereotyped, even demonized, everyone who thought differently on this issue. By listening genuinely and deeply, they came to realize, this is a good person. I like this person. I respect this person. I don't agree with this person's opinions. But I am willing to listen. I am open. I'll tell you, to watch minds become open and hearts become softened, and positions melt into a higher synergistic third alternative, is really a thrilling experience. These two steps don't always work simply because people won't always apply them. I was once in Washington with the Young President's Organization teaching this material, and I invited the president of the National Education Association, the NEA, and the head person behind the voucher movement in California to come up and go through the two steps. Begrudgingly, they went through the first one, both saying that they had no idea what they would find in the search and that they would not compromise. When it came to the second step of having to restate to the other's satisfaction, they attempted, and then they caved in. They became very defensive and then literally became hostile, calling one another names, including describing each other's parents. The audience literally dismissed them. They were their invited guests, and they were dismissed because they failed to serve the purpose of the conference. Then the audience became synergistic. These were parents who genuinely cared, who were aware that it was a very complex issue, and that you couldn't make sweeping generalizations, and that you needed to have a deeper understanding. The audience became more and more creative about how to strengthen the education system, including the degree to which the market could be brought into education in some settings and what to do in those settings where it would be very difficult and even perhaps counterproductive. I have done this many, many times on all kinds of business issues. Frequently, I ask my clients, what issue seems to divide your culture? One that's almost non-discussable. Usually they are hesitant, but eventually they come forth with it. I ask them, would you be willing to allow me to use that as an example in producing synergy, a third alternative? Oh, they usually respond, oh, it's too tender, too difficult. I don't know how it could possibly be done. I explain the process and the two steps. Then I assure them that if there is enough sincerity and moral authority in the group, which expects sincerity and genuine effort toward practicing the 2 points, it would give them one of the most powerful experiences their organization could ever have. Not only in solving the issue, but also, even more importantly, in developing an immune system inside the culture that would enable them to do the same thing on any issue that comes along. Once I was with a group of healthcare professionals that included trustees, executives, administrators, and many of the physicians. The issue to be debated, one that they had fought over for many months, was the use of outside physicians. The medical director was the spokesman for one side, the CEO for the other. In front of about 100 people, I took them slowly through the 2 steps. They produced a third alternative that both were absolutely enthusiastic about, not just because they liked it better than the present arrangement or what either had proposed, but also because it was so healing and bonding to their relationship. Another time I was working with a group of insurance people in Cancun, Mexico, at one of their big international conferences. I was asked to speak on cultural transformation through principle-centered leadership. After sensing the mood of the groups, how artificial their communication on substantive issues was, how polarized the front office was from the general managers in the field, and the general managers were from the producing agents, I decided to bag my prepared speech. Instead, I decided to help them see how serious this cultural malaise was and the impact it was having on their business and their customers. So I simply took one question, who owns the customer? And had 2 people from each of the 3 groups, headquarters people, general managers, and producing agents, come up in front of the entire assembly. Each in turn gave the reasons why they own the customer. The producing agents claimed that they found the customer, had the relationship, and sold the customer. The general manager looked with disdain on that reasoning and said, we are the ones who have to service these people over time. You can walk. We can't. We have to stay and represent our products and the fulfillment of our promises. The headquarters executives looked with disdain upon both groups, saying essentially, you people are clueless. Who developed the products? Who fulfills on the products? Who has set up the whole institutionalized system to make our business run? Thereafter, it became obvious to everybody how sick the culture had become, how dichotomized, how split. No one group owned the customer, but the customer owned himself or herself. And that unless they got their act together, they would not be able to get and keep customers. Not over time. The experience was humbling to them and made them very open to going through the two steps of producing a synergistic third alternative. One time I received a phone call from the president of a company to ask if I would help resolve a very costly, protracted lawsuit with a major client customer. The client was suing the company for lack of performance against their understanding of agreed-upon criteria. I knew this president well. He had been trained in the material I teach, but felt a lack of confidence in his ability to apply it. I assured him he did not need me. He could do it by himself. So I slowly retaught the material to him over the phone and got him to read the material I had given him earlier. He was very hesitant and fearful. But after my reaffirming him very strongly, he agreed to do it on his own. He called up the president of the suing company and suggested that they meet for lunch. The other president said, "There's no need. Let's let the legal process carry itself out," probably thinking that the calling president was ready to settle, compromise, or play softball. He decided to stick to his hardball tactics and turn down the luncheon invitation. So my friend told him what he was trying to do and why. He told him about the two steps, and also told him that, though he would not have his own attorney come, he, the other president, could bring his attorney and say nothing if the attorney counseled him not to. This way, he would avoid the risk of compromising himself in some way in the court of law. He again said, "What have you got to lose? An hour or two? It has already cost our companies many tens of thousands of dollars, and we're just beginning the process." On that basis, the other president agreed to meet and to bring his attorney. With the three of them in the room and two flip charts, my friend said, "First, I want to see if I understand your position in this suit." And he restated it as completely and fully as he possibly could. After a few minutes, he said, "Do you feel I have a correct understanding? Has this been correct and fair?" The other president said, "Yes, except for two points." His attorney interrupted him and suggested he say no more. But this president, sensing that there was genuine movement here and true sincerity in a very powerful two-step effort, basically told his attorney to shut up, and he opened up these two points. My friend wrote them down on the flip chart, and again he asked, "Do you feel like I understand? Is there anything else you want me to understand? Has anything been omitted?" The other president said, "No, I feel you understand." And then my friend said, "Could I ask you to listen to me as I have attempted to listen to you? Would that be fair?" What essentially happened was that the first point, that is, searching for the third alternative, emerged through their attempting to understand each other. The motivation to solve the problem emerged. And not only did they settle in a way that deeply satisfied both of them, but they also continued their relationship. Their remaining struggle was to figure out how they were going to communicate their desire to continue this business relationship to two cultures that had coalesced around their fight and opposition with one another. The main point is that people can do this on their own. They don't need a third-party facilitator. It takes the ability to be a participant and an observer, or a third-party facilitator at the same time. This takes a lot of mental and emotional discipline, but if you have faith in the principles and sufficient internal courage and integrity, in short, moral authority, you can do it. Sometimes the nature of a third alternative may appear to be a compromise, that one or both gave in a little. But this isn't necessarily so. it could be that the key thing had not been the issue at all. What became the most important element was the quality of the relationship, the depth of the understanding, or the alteration of the motivation. I remember a colleague once sharing with me the story of his father and mother. It beautifully illustrates this point. Here are his words. My father had been a superb dentist for 30 years when he was diagnosed with amyloidosis, a rare disease similar to cancer. The doctors gave him 6 months to live. Because of the effects of the disease, he had to give up his practice. So here sits this man who had always been extremely active, with nothing to do all day except think about his fatal disease. He decided he wanted to take his mind off things by putting a greenhouse in the backyard where he could grow his favorite plants. This wouldn't be a fancy glass greenhouse that you see behind Victorian mansions. This would be one of those kit greenhouses complete with corrugated plastic for a roof and black plastic sides. My mother didn't want that monstrosity in her yard. She said she would die if her neighbors saw it. The G-word topic got to the point where they couldn't speak civilly to each other about it. I think the issue became the site of all the redirected anger about the disease. One day my mom told me she was thinking about really trying to understand my father's point of view. She wanted to resolve the situation so that both could be happy. She knew she didn't want a greenhouse in her backyard. She'd rather have morning glory in all her perennial flower beds than that greenhouse. But she also knew that she wanted my father to be happy and productive. She decided to step back and let him do it. She decided that my dad's happiness meant more to her than either the backyard or the neighbors. As it turns out, that greenhouse kept my dad going long after the doctors had given up on him. He lived for 2.5 more years. At night, when he couldn't sleep because of the chemotherapy, he went out to the greenhouse to see how his plants were doing. In the morning, watering those plants gave him a reason to get up. His greenhouse gave him work to do, something else to concentrate on, while his body collapsed on him. I remember my mom commenting that supporting my dad's desire to build the greenhouse was one of the wisest things she had ever done. Close quote. Initially, the greenhouse was a lose to my colleague's mother, until she subordinated her initial desires to her greater desire for her husband's happiness and welfare. This teaches that when you understand someone, you redefine what win-win is. Nevertheless, she had not initially felt enough respect to want to understand and what was important to her husband, and she wouldn't have made the shift. Interestingly, the synergy that resulted was not a third alternative solution, it was a third alternative attitude or motive. The first alternative was not to have the greenhouse. The second alternative was to let him have the greenhouse grudgingly. The third alternative was to truly understand him, to cheerfully and lovingly find her happiness in his satisfaction at having the greenhouse. This is often the way synergy works. An outside observer might say that it was a compromise, but if you were to talk to this woman, she would surely deny that she was compromising herself. She fulfilled herself in her husband's happiness and well-being. Such attitudinal synergy is a magnificent expression of mature love. Most transactions between people end in compromise, win-lose or lose-win. But third alternative solutions, whether they be in substance, in spirit, or in simply achieving mutual respect and understanding without any agreement at all, are illustrations of transformation. That is, people have been changed. They have become more open in their hearts and minds. They have learned and listened. They see things in new, fresh ways. They have been transformed. Let me describe this in a continuum as we contrast transactional and transformational solutions. Transactional solutions would basically involve lose-win, win-lose, or compromise. But where transformation has taken place, It usually manifests itself in mutual understanding without even agreeing, or in win-lose and lose-win, but with increased understanding and caring. Or perhaps there may be compromise on the issue, but synergy in the relationship. But the highest form of transformation would be synergy on both the issue and on the relationship. I am convinced that most disputes, I mean literally most, could be prevented and solved through synergistic third alternative communication. Suing and the law should be used as the court of last resort, not the first. A litigious culture is unhealthy for society, destroys trust, gives terrible modeling, and at best results in compromise. I hope someday to join with a corporate general counsel and a federal judge, both of whom practice these ideas with astounding results, in writing a book for attorneys and those who educate and hire attorneys, and also for those who want to solve seemingly intractable problems without hiring attorneys. The title would be Blessed Are the Peacemakers, subtitled Synergy in the Prevention and Settlement of Disputes.